Having a healthy self-image is something that affects a few areas of your life, some obvious, some not so obvious. And while women definitely deal with scrutiny of self-image the most publicly, it is something that men also deal with. So I really wanted to have that conversation. And on this episode, I was fortunate enough to link up with Ahmad Barber, who is a fashion photographer, to discuss it. So in this episode, the first half, because I am a photographer, we're going to talk about his photography. He has some amazing work. We're going to talk about his process, how he started photography, some do's and don'ts, and just tips of maneuvering through that space in regards to working with clients and things of that nature. And on the second half, we're going to talk about self-image. We're going to talk about ways it can affect your personal life, your family life, networking, differences between a straight male's experience and a gay male's experience, and a few other things. So I'm excited to share it with you guys. This is One Could Argue, a podcast about thoughts and ideas that change our perspective on the world and each other. My name is Kyle, and let's get into it. So just tell us a little bit about, you know, like your history, because like I said, you've done stuff for Upscale and Forever 21 and just a bunch of stuff. So what's your beginnings?
Yeah, so I'm Ahmad Barber. I'm a 27-year-old fashion photographer living in Atlanta. I also am co-owner of a media company, conglomerate, you can say, of four different agencies. Our main goal is to spread diversity, awareness, and to connect generations with different cultures and things like that. We do that through digital media, out-of-home media, marketing, communications. It's called Streamline Media Communications. I currently art direct Upscale magazine. I've been with them for 4 years now. So I handle all of their graphic design and the photo direction and stuff like that. I also art direct Radiant Health magazine. This will be my year and a half with them. I shoot literally all of the images for them and do the art direction and the design for them as well. So yeah, that's my spill, my shortened spill of things that I do. I graduated from Morehouse 2013 with a bachelor's in science. My focus was biology. I was headed to be an anesthesiologist. Didn't want to go at all. My family just wanted me to have like something that was kind of assured that I'll make money and I'll be stable. Didn't come from a creative family at all. To this day, they're still figuring out what I'm doing.
Exactly.
I've worked with in my photography career. I've worked with companies like Bloomingdale's, Forever 21. I've been featured in Vogue, Ebony, Harper's Bazaar, Online, all of those type of stuff. With a lot of my work that's just went viral from social media.
Right.
So yeah, that's why.
So I am. Like I said, I got familiar with your work because I was living on the Explore page, and I saw, I forgot the photo I saw. I think it was a photo of this girl, and she was in a car.
Ashley.
Bruh, the lipstick and like the orange and everything that was just popping so crazy. I was like, yo, this is nuts. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you see certain like photographers or like editors who just have like the frequency separation and have like the tones and the highlights and everything is just like A1, yo. And I'm just like, this is nuts.
So funny thing about that photo, not to cut you off, that was actually a throwaway photo. I did not like, and I threw away that whole look. In concept, we shot that in March, I believe. If this is the same photo I think you're talking about.
This one. What's the name of it?
Yeah. that day, let me just paint the picture. It was 17 degrees outside. We were literally shooting in at the top of a parking deck. It was like 30-mile-per-hour winds.
Oh, man.
So, like, literally, it was like the most inopportune setting to shoot.
Yeah, right.
And if you can imagine her skin being like more pale and blue, that's how it was coming out the camera. So I was just like, no, this is too stressful. I'm gonna go in studio. So we shot the whole thing in studio. I was traveling from Toronto about 2 weeks ago and listening to some people like Annie Leibovitz and stuff like that, and talking about like revisiting photos, and I was like, oh, okay, I'm just go through my hard drive and start looking at stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In the airport, I was like, I'm not going to over edit the photo. So I gave myself an hour and a half, because that was the time that was left to get on my flight. Edited it, didn't even think twice about anything. I just, whatever felt right, I just edited it. And literally I timed myself. I was like, I'm going to upload this as soon as I get on the plane and not look at it and be able to look at it. It was a 6-hour flight from Toronto to San Francisco. And I was like, okay, I'm just let it do what it do. And I got off, and it's been like one of the most widely received photos I've posted in a minute. And I was really surprised, because it was something that I didn't even like at first.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, thank you. I'm glad you appreciate it. But it's just like something that I literally didn't think like that was going to be a photo that people really was like vibing with at all.
Yeah. I feel you on that. Cause I know a lot of times it just seems like ideas that you sometimes feel like, oh man, this one is fire.
Yeah.
And then you put it out and it's like, okay. It gets received, but it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it's the one that's like, I don't want to do it, or it requires me going back and revisiting it, or I'm just like, bruh, I'll just put this out, so I put something out.
Yeah.
And that's the one that's like,
literally what it was for.
And it's interesting because I don't know what it is, like, because it gets weird sometimes, because it makes you, I know me personally, it makes me sometimes be like, what mindset was I in? Like, what made me not want this one, but this one? What's that weird parallel?
And that's what I was saying this about me this week, in trying to quote-unquote level up and go to the next level in understanding my work, and also understanding the response to my work. And you know, I have quite a nice following, so I'm just trying to understand like what my audience is and what they like, and you know, how can I also be you know, appeal to my audience's stuff more as well to further my reach. But it's like some hidden formula. I've never tapped into it just yet, but I'm somewhere between understanding what works for me and in my mind and comes innately to me versus the outside perspective of what everyone else sees. Because like even me looking at that photo in particular, or many of the other photos that has happened like that, where I didn't like them at first, I didn't see at first what everyone else saw.
Right.
And a lot of times when I don't think about it, that's when a lot of it's received so well. Mm-hmm. A lot of the photos that I can go back to, and I've even my first Bloomingdale shoot, I threw away the whole shoot at first. I didn't edit the shoot for, I would say, like 4 months. Team got mad.
I could imagine.
We reshot a lot of stuff. And then one day I literally just woke up. I dreamt about the shoot. I mean, I was like, I can edit it like that. And I literally edited it. That shoot to this day still get likes. So it's just like, I don't know what the formula is. I think it's just somewhere that I have to let go as an artist and as a creative and just let it do what it do versus trying to like make it look like something or make it be something that it may not be.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. So just going back to something you said earlier, because I know you said you didn't come from a creative background and you didn't even go to school for any of this. Like, what made, like, you're really good.
Thank you.
So it's like, what made you, you know what I mean? When did you really start actually being like, okay, I'm sort of going to start doing this a little bit? And what made you do that?
So, I mean, I picked up a camera, I would say my 10th grade year in high school. I've always been an introvert, but in high school, I was more extroverted than I am now, like much more extroverted. So I had a lot of friends, you know, we would always hang out. And I always would get mad. This is before Instagram really blew up and everybody was on Facebook. So I would always get mad that we had no documentation of the night or like the evening. So I would just literally just document things. It was more so from a cathartic perspective of, oh, now we could just capture those memories, capture that energy or whatever. And then I started doing self-portraits on Flickr, which is like my favorite platform.
Even still?
It used to be.
Okay.
I would say I've definitely gotten more into Instagram now, but I would say in the last 3 years, I've kind of trailed off of Flickr, but I've been on there for a while. It started with that. So it's always like this space of releasing and, you know, just kind of taking a step from what my academic life was, because I was always into the sciences. I've always been like 2 grades ahead, like AP everything. And I've always been the nerd. So outside of school, like, I just didn't want to just be studying and, you know, doing all these labs and stuff. So I kind of took that mindset to when I got here to Morehouse in Atlanta. And literally, I would say up until my sophomore year, that's when I found out, like, you really can make money from this.
Right.
I just kind of assisted on set with a few photographers here. One was Harold Daniels. He is an amazing photographer here. And he shoots for, like, Time and all these big companies and stuff. And I didn't, like, at this point, I didn't know that, like, this is tangible for me.
Right, right.
And watching him on set, I was like, you know, I got to start taking it serious. And he was like, you know, you got talent. Like, you know, just take it seriously and start developing a portfolio. So literally that summer, I went home and I didn't say nothing to nobody. I was just like, I'm going to, you know, take my little money that I got. I'm going to order some stuff offline. Mm-hmm. I ordered, like, the most basic setup you can imagine. I always had a camera because that was my thing. I just had a camera.
Right.
So I had my camera that I had for like 6 years, and I just started shooting my portfolio. It wasn't for fashion. It wasn't for anything in particular. It was just like stuff that I liked.
Right.
Fast forward to my senior year of college at Morehouse, where I would say that's the year where I was just like, okay, this is my direction. I want to do fashion. I want to do editorial. I want to do print. That was my main goal, is to do print. I want to get published. And I kind of like just took like literally every break that I had, any spare time I had, I was shooting with friends. I was finding models on set. Mm-hmm. I mean, at school, I even got connected with the local agency. So I kind of just took it from there. In terms of being self-taught, I am like the nerd still. So like, I do research all the time on, you know, what's the better techniques to research. I mean, retouch. What's the better techniques to tone and stuff like that. Like, even this morning, I was, I'm a big color person.
Mm-hmm.
Though black is my favorite color, which is odd, but I have like a very insane like eye for color. Like,
right.
I'm just now stepping into actually being comfortable saying that, but that's like my thing. Like, I like mixing contrasting colors. But I was having an issue with my computer. Colors weren't showing right for me. So I've been researching like different programs and stuff like that, but that's a whole nother topic. But yeah, so being self-taught, I never stopped learning. I don't feel like I'm at the level that I want to be, and I never think I will be, be able like to say that I'm like at the level that I want to be. I don't want to be stagnant, so I'm always learning. Like, I took, I just got done with the master class. Have you ever heard of that?
Yep. I think they have ones with like Martin Scorsese and like all of these people.
Yeah. So I just,
I think Anne Leibovitz has one too.
I just took hers. Uh-huh. And she, again, you know, just kind of invigorated me and motivated me to be like more in touch with the personal side of the person you're shooting. And it's not just a client, it's not just a model, but like getting to know that person a little bit more. So that I think a lot of the newer work that I'll be releasing soon will have like a very different tone, but, I'm always learning. That's my thing.
Nowadays, are you looking for more so things that aren't tangible? Like, oh, maybe it's not more so how do I get better at frequency or tones or curves, adjustments and stuff, versus how do I better reflect what I feel or figure out what I feel to portray it on the, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think feeling is the most powerful thing in terms of creating.
Mm-hmm.
If I can't make you feel something with my work, it doesn't matter how technical I can be.
Right.
If I can't make you feel it, I haven't achieved anything. And I think I had that before, but in the process of catering to clients and catering to tasks, you lose that. You know, you lose that in trying to, it's hard to balance the idea of fulfilling a task or like, you know, dominating a shot list and just getting that shot versus feeling it.
Right.
And I think that's something that even with this masterclass I learned, is that part of shooting either just a person is understanding is not their beauty. It's just like, what do they have inside beyond, like what is beneath like the surface level of their skin? And how can you tap into that? How can you make that be a, like integrate it into your photo and make it a better photo? That is something that I'm still learning. And I think if I can integrate that into high fashion photography in a way that is still not as just about, oh, this is a, you know, a label, or, oh, this is just, you know, pretty. How can I deepen the meaning of a photo mm-hmm. with feeling and care and love and soul and all those type of things.
Right.
That's my goal. Like, I want to make sure that I can tap into that while still keeping the high fashion edge that I have, whereas, you know, taking it to a deeper level and really connecting with people in a different level.
The body series that you did earlier on, you had mentioned how it was one of your favorite series. And as I'm looking at it and hearing what you're saying, just seeing how even the fact of, because the few I saw, like the heads were, I don't know if they were edited off or the way they was just standing, they were hidden. And it just, it's those things that I feel like sometimes if you're looking in the mirror and you may sometimes see like certain like just curves or lines of muscle or like veins, it's just like, yo, like that looks kind of cool. But the way you shot it, just bringing attention to like the ribs or whatever's around like the abdomen or stuff like that, like was that for sure one of those times? And what?
So I started, I'm bringing it back. I'm glad you bring that up. But yeah, I started that series to take the person outside of the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it was a business issue that I had where I was actually interested in shooting that for a gallery. And that was my purpose. But a lot of people that I was shooting, they were very like, you know, top models, they're budding careers, but they didn't want nudes out of them.
Right, right.
So they were like, well, you know, just shoot it. So my face not in it. And I was like, okay, well, in my first couple shoots I did, very conventional. And I started doing some research on like a lot of German artists and sculptures. Like that's where I really got inspiration from, is like actual statues.
Mm-hmm.
And how the statue of a man, it was different when you didn't know who the man was.
Mm-hmm.
Like the imagination of, you know, who is that, or just focusing on those curves or on those ribs or on those body parts was much more, you know, the attention was different if I didn't have a face. So I was like, okay, I'm going to shoot it that way.
Right.
And I did it in a way where it was kind of twisting the body in different random shapes, or the lighting was hitting the body in a different way, purposefully to draw attention to certain parts of the body. Now I want to do it again a different way, but still keeping that essence there. I think the body and the way the body moves and the shapes and curves of the body are, you know, is very beautiful. And I think we take that, we don't really focus or appreciate it as much as we probably should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I wanted to do with that series, just like to make it like more beautiful and like something that's more like can be more appreciated.
So, do you find that with your background in science, are there any ways that impacts your work where you're like, like it's crazy how I'm utilizing this to make this better, or and how are those ways?
Understanding the body from a anatomical standpoint has really helped me in even understanding like what to research and to like focus on this body part, or, you know, how can I help you your shape be different and things like that. And the more so beyond that, the process of science has really helped me in being organized in terms as an organized creative, so to speak.
Right. Right.
My mind races. Like I think a lot about everything. But having the skills or the, I guess the knowledge of like how to do research or how to, you know, organize ideas or organize a process from science, that's really helped me, and I use that in my work every day. And then, you know, just knowing where certain body parts are, I mean,
right,
just
right, right, for sure.
And then, I mean, my second thing that I also bring in is my computational skills. I was a math minor. I tested out of every math class, so I was like very like smart in that way. But that's helped me now on my business end of, you know, how to project sales and how to, you know, calculate things and, you know, shift and save and stuff like that. So I still use my science in some level. It's probably not in the most conventional sense.
Right, for sure. When you say you're good at getting the structure together in regards of putting things in order, what does that process look like for you, whether it's for a shoot or...
Yeah. Okay, so similar to what you just said, every day I wake up... probably about 4:30, 5 o'clock. I know that's odd for a lot of people. That's the time I prefer to wake up.
Right, right.
Wake up. The first thing I do, regardless of if I'm half awake or not, is I immediately write down what I want to do for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to write it in levels. So it's like the stuff I absolutely have to get done, mm-hmm. stuff I would like to get done, and the stuff that I really kind of like is just like on the back burner.
Right.
I do that for a day, the day, the week, and the month, and even the quarter. Mm-hmm. So I know that sounds like very excessive, but that's kind of how I lay out to-do lists. And then I prepare. So like, for example, today, before I came here, I was like, okay, well, I have to prepare some photos. I have some, like 3 sets of photos I have to edit. So instead of me trying to edit them quickly, I just uploaded them, make sure they're on my hard drive. I put them in categories of, oh, I need to do skin, I need to do body for this, I need to do clothing for this, and kind of organize them in like different folders so that now when I get into a mind, I'm very like tunnel vision sometimes when I edit. So mm-hmm. if I'm doing all skin, I'm really, that's all I want to focus on right now. So I'm like organizing all of this stuff I have to do in skin. If I'm doing all color, I'm organizing all the stuff I have to do in color. I also don't, similar to what you were saying about earlier about like, you know, one photo takes 3 hours. I can't do one photo effectively at one time, like sit down 3 hours and do it all at one time mm-hmm. because my details and my focus is not going to be there by hour 3.
Right, right.
So like I do things in layers too. So like similar to like doing a lab, like everything has a little process to it where I'll take one day for skin, one day for color, one day for any extra stuff I want to do. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like break things down that way, and I'm learning now. That's how I can effectively and efficiently get stuff done versus trying to do it all at once.
Right.
So I would say the basis of my process is to break it down and then build it back up first, and then kind of segregate different tasks into groupings mm-hmm. that I can kind of like, I'm an assembly line, just do it all at once. But it's that one task that I'm doing across multiple things.
Right. That makes sense. And it's funny because when I was saying that, when I think about it, when I may sit down in front of a photo or something and edit it for a few hours, I always, like, I'll send it off to Groove, and he'll be like, because he hasn't looked at it.
Right.
He can hit me right back and be like, yo, this you went wrong. Too yeah. hard on this, or this looks too bright, or this looks, and I'm like, okay, I thought it looked amazing, but my eyes have turned to mush because yeah. I've been staring at this thing right. for so long. Like, I'm talking no breaks. Like, yeah. my door's locked. Same. I'm not eating food, look. Nothing.
I believe you, I know. Yeah.
So it's interesting, like you said, in regards to breaking that apart.
And even now, I'm also choosing my battles of what I want to research and what I don't. Mm-hmm. So even the idea of I'm learning, I have a network of retouchers that I work with just on stuff that I know someone else can do better than me. And right. I think that's a clear thing with a lot of creatives. I was raised to be an everything man. So that's how I agree with you in terms of wanting to do everything. But to do everything effectively, you can't do it all by yourself.
Right, right.
So now even being able to have those fresh eyes when retouchers send stuff back, or even giving them notes like, okay, even whatever retouchers I choose to work with, I give them literally like a file, a PDF of, this is the tone. This is these are the different elements of the photo I need to be changed. Pay attention to this side of the photo because I messed up. Things like that. And that's helped me really have those fresh eyes that I need to really execute like a really, really good, stunning photo.
What are some of the methods that you, and it may be, I think you've answered the question a little bit in regards to saying like, yo, focus on this, or yeah. here's where I'm trying to go with this. But what are some things that you really seen have helped though that communication go when there are 4, 5, or 6 people yeah. involved trying to get one shoot across?
Personally, I'm not the best communicator. so it's helped me understand how to, and I'll say, okay, I'm not the best communicator because I am not the most emotional person. Mm-hmm. So I'm very straightforward.
Right.
Especially if it's business. I'm not a person that sugarcoats or, you know, holds back. Like, if it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. But in terms of effectively having a team, because that's what I is not people that I work with. Like, this is my team for that shoot. Mm-hmm. And working as a team, be it paid or just a passion project, I have to communicate my vision and then allow you to insert yours. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the main thing that I've learned in working with, like, all of those many different people. You know, learning how to put together a mood board in a way where I have a general vision. I'll show you before I leave. Like, I have a a Pinterest board where I'll have, this is the overall concept, but this is the concept for generally just styling. This is the concept for general makeup. This is the concept for general hair. And then allowing them to take that back and be like, okay, well, what do you see? Like, how can you add your stuff to the table? Because what I learned early on in my career is that I'm a photographer. I think in terms of photos. I don't think in terms of clothes. I don't think in terms of makeup. I don't think in terms of hair. Even sometimes lighting, I may have one perspective, but having other people on set that can help with lighting.
Right.
Those are people that think different. Like, these are very specific things that they think about. So having those different people think about those different things have helped me elevate my work. And even their work as well, because, like, even my favorite stylist, Ray Simone, I've helped her understand, like, okay, well, maybe if we just, you know, change the shape of this, the way it falls on the body, or unconventionally put something on or things like that. Now we're collaborating on different ideas where, you know, she's thinking, in this is how you put on the shirt. You know, this is how this shirt is supposed to go. I'm thinking the light is hitting her on the shoulder, so I may need a different curve here.
Right.
That's a whole different perspective.
Right.
And we all have all of these different perspectives on set that are now collaborating for something way more elevated than if I was just trying to do it myself.
Okay. That makes perfect sense. So in regards to that, when you're doing these shoots, do you have the same team every time, or are there different teams every shoot?
Yes and no, I'll say that.
Okay.
I think now, at the level that I am now, understanding that every shoot calls for something different.
Right.
Not every person can do the same things. So, like, for example, I'm now expanding beyond fashion. So I'm doing commercial, I'm doing beauty, doing even some hair stuff on the side. I'm doing some lifestyle. Those all, they have a particular aesthetic of my vision, but the look and feel may be different. So there are some consistencies in terms of the group of people I choose to work with, but every team for every shoot is not the same. But all of these people are within my particular network of people that I like to work with. So I prefer those people.
Okay, so because that was going to be my second question. My second question was, if you're in a situation where you are dealing with a new team in regards to a shoot, how do you deal with that?
I said, and that still happens.
Okay.
So, like, I don't get to control the team on every shoot.
Okay.
So, like, for example, a lot of times with outsourcing for magazines, they're just hiring me. They don't, and I guess because I have a different skill set of having a network of people. Mm-hmm. Every photographer doesn't have that. And every photographer doesn't even care what team they work with.
Right.
So there a lot of magazines or clients' perspective, they're just like, we just want to work with you. We're going to take the stress off of you choosing the team. We already know who we may think may be best to work with you. And what happens is a lot of times the communication is not the best before set. The set day or the shoot day that I would like, because I like to have like fittings and meetings and calls and stuff. But that always doesn't happen. So what I have to do is basically prepare for any questions that someone might ask me, but also prepare any questions that I might have for them.
Right.
So if there's a question about, oh, well, what do you think hair should look like? I already have a mood board about like how I think the hair should look like.
Mm-hmm.
And if you agree, you agree. If you don't, you don't. I'll choose to, you know, keep my opinion to myself. Cause again, if it's not a shoot for a Ahmad Barber or a client that, you know, a magazine I'm art directing or anything like that, then I can't control what the overall vision should be.
Right.
It's just the quality of that vision that's being executed. So to communicate to teams that are not my normal teams or new teams, I just have to kind of prepare and be open to what may happen that day and just make sure my stuff is like really organized.
Right.
That's all I
can focus on. And that literally answers my question, because I was going to ask, when you're going into a situation where you may be dealing with new people, how do you necessarily deal with that level of trust with someone coming in and be like, oh, well, I feel like this should be like this, or I feel like, you know what I mean? And I think what you just said in regards to being like, you know, I'm here, but this is not my shoot.
Yeah.
So maybe just turning that level of it off and be like, okay.
And it's a fine line, because I have also been on the flip side of a situation. If a shoot goes wrong, it's my fault.
Mm-hmm.
Because at the end of the day, that final image is on me.
Right.
The quality of that image is on me, because I'm the person taking the picture. So if, for example, let's say I did a shoot and the clothes was wrong, and I chose to like keep my mouth shut on set, but at the end of the day, the client will say, well, Imaj, you didn't see like that the clothing was wrong, like you didn't say anything. So they're going to blame me. They're not even going to talk to the stylist. So like I have to kind of pick and choose what my battles are, and how to make that final image or make that final shoot. And I've learned like different ways to say stuff on set, not to be harsh and not to be too forward. Mm-hmm. Tact is very important in communication.
Right, for sure.
So understanding those things and filling people out. Some people are not receptive to changes.
That's
or
a fact. Say,
opinions. Other people are. So if their person is not receptive, then, which is not the best practice always, I tend to go above them. Mm-hmm. And be like, you know, if this is my client, I'm just going to go to the client and say, look, this is what I see on camera translating. You can, you know, operate how you want to operate, but this is just what I see. I just wanted to bring that to your attention.
Right.
And I let them do the process from there. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that's been very effective as well, because then what it allows the client to do is bring the stylist over to me and they'll be like, can you explain it? So now I'm forcing you to collaborate with me,
right,
and to
right,
listen and
right.
be open to opinions. So it's different ways. It depends on the client. But
so it's being ready to get rowdy when you got to get rowdy and being chill.
Yeah.
When
and you sometimes, be chill. Because I am very young and now because I have facial hair and stuff now. But I mean, I used to deal with like a lot of, you know, people trying to punk me.
Mm-hmm.
And like showing up and being the youngest person on set still is intimidating sometimes. But now I've kind of like, I'm just used to it.
Right.
But being able to show them that I'm still a professional,
mm-hmm.
that's what shakes people the most. You know, showing up and not being like, oh, you know, you got this young guy coming in, and then when we get ready to turn the set on, it's like I turn into a director. Like, I can really direct and run a shoot.
Right.
And it kind of puts people in the perspective like, oh, wow, oh, shit, I got to be on my, you know, my
right,
team
right,
now.
Right.
So, like, I have gotten rowdy on set a few times. Like, it's one, this is like a very random moment, but shooting a celebrity, I don't know why this particular day was like a huge entourage on set.
Mm-hmm.
He comes over to me and says he had to do like something shirtless. For whatever reason, he was uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you know, I'm not really uncomfortable. I don't want to know like behind the scenes or whatever like that. So I said something to the producer for that day. They did nothing. So we're still trying to get this shot, but it's kind of like a stalemate. Like, we're all just sitting there waiting for something to happen. Nobody's
right.
saying nothing. So I literally had to get up and I was like, everybody got to go. And they were just like, whatever. Like, nigga, shut up. Like,
right, right.
I was like,
no, everybody got to go. Like, you got to go now.
Yeah, nothing happened. So literally I had to like nut up a little bit.
Right, right.
And of course, in the moment, everybody was like, oh my, like chill, chill, chill. But the client was like, thank you. Like, that's what I needed to happen.
Right, right.
So like, you know, I'm from Detroit. So right. I know how to nut up if I need mm-hmm. to nut up. But I don't always like doing that.
Yeah. Segueing over into what made me actually reach out to you,
mm-hmm.
I was on Instagram one day and I had started following you when I was going through your Instagram story, and I can't remember what you said exactly, but it was something to the effect of like, "Yo, like I'm dealing with esteem, self-esteem. Yeah. I'm dealing with being comfortable, and it's something that I'm learning, but." I'm pushing through every yeah. single day. So, like I said, that's something that resonated with me because for some time I've just been doing just research in regards to like how people feel about themselves, how men feel about themselves yeah. specifically. What does that journey look yeah. like for you? Like what are some things that you are dealing with and how, you know what I mean? Just how we got this way,
yeah.
how we got this way, what things contributed to it and how we're making our way through and becoming and growing more comfortable with ourselves yeah. along the way.
Well, just a little bit about my issue or journey. Weight has always been something that I've dealt with.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I was at my thinnest or smallest, so to speak, I still felt like I could do more.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say it's because of the industry that I'm in, but it's probably because of the industry that I'm in where I'm seeing these beautiful people all day, every day.
Right.
And it's forced me to be even harder on myself because outside of my self-esteem, I'm on it. Like,
right.
I'm on it. I'm growing. I'm successful. And it's just like this one element of myself when I look in the mirror, I don't see I'm there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't instantly see the progress that I'm seeing in all these other parts of my life.
Right.
So it forces me to be like more critical of myself. And that's, you know, of course, in turn, forced me to have very, you know, fragile self-esteem. Some
right.
days I'm up, some days I'm down. I would say to deal with that right now, what I've done is just, you know, the same processing that I've done for my personal, like my actual career, my work, I'm doing that with myself. So like, I take it literally 1 week at a time. Mm-hmm. Everybody says take it one day at a time, but I have to think about a week. And I try to do things that are going to motivate me and make me feel like something's happening. Even if to the rest of the world, nothing's happening.
right.
It's going to make me feel like something is happening and, you know, I'm growing in a certain area. I would say physical and spiritual health are just as important.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is not a give or take with those. And I had to work on my spiritual stuff first before I try to work on my just, like, physical
right.
elements. I had to talk. I had to be... I'm not... Because I'm an introvert, I'm not, like, open to seeking help outwardly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always writing and stuff like that. And that's not always the best for me, at mm-hmm. least I'm learning. Being able to talk to my friends about feeling depressed or being able to talk to... anyone just being
right,
and you know, talk to other people and collaborate on what they're feeling and how we're feeling the same way, but you look completely different than me,
right?
From the outside looking in, I thought you had your shit together,
mm-hmm.
and that's what a lot of people have with me. It's like, and I'm not saying I don't have my shit together, but there are things that I'm working on,
right?
You know,
right,
like I'm still in progress. So being able to fully and wholeheartedly accept that, and being open to other unconventional ways of dealing with that,
mm-hmm.
it's really helped me get to a place where I can push through. I would say probably this year has been the hardest for me because mm-hmm. I have been very busy. I have been very stressed. It's probably been like one of my most stressful years. I'm just having a lot of like family things going on, having a lot of career things going on. And still trying to have myself together.
Right.
It's been hard. So, being able to now accept my issues, if you want to call them issues, and being able to just face them and deal with them, that's mm-hmm. been my first step in dealing with this thing. I haven't figured out like all of the exact steps after that.
Right, right.
My first step is to accept what is wrong or what needs to change and deal with it. Like mm-hmm. just, you know, face on, just say like, okay, I need to change X, Y, and Z and begin changing it and not putting it like on a back burner.
Or right.
not like... I'm a suppressor too. So it's like I was just suppressing and not deal with it. But now I can deal with it.
Yeah. That makes sense. And it's funny because I was on the phone with a friend the other night and I was just in just preparing for the episode and just having, because like I said, these are all things that I be thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah.
So as I was thinking about it, I was just having a conversation. I was like, you know, I feel like this, as with many things, starts in grade school.
For sure.
And when I think about it, now that I'm older and I look back, I'm like, yo, like, I feel like it was either your appearance or your clothing.
For sure.
That was your leverage.
Yeah.
Either you were the attractive girl or guy that everyone talked to just out of that attraction to someone yeah. who's attractive, or I had clothes and I was fresh.
Yeah.
So it was like... You know what I mean? Those were was your leverage in school. It was like,
sure.
that was the only thing you... And I guess the clothing thing was something you didn't even have really control over. That's something that was up to your parents. But your looks, your genetic makeup, that's
yeah.
something that you got to have every single day.
For sure. I mean, and even with the idea of just how you present yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Coming from an environment like Morehouse where that is ingrained. Like, you know, the idea of being fresh and polished every day. It's taught. Like, it's like a tradition. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's one day out of a week where you have to wear a suit. Like, that's how ingrained it is. And coming out of that environment where when I graduated, I was, you know, much thinner than I am now because I felt like I had to be. You
mm-hmm.
know, like, I had to be this, look like this and things like that.
Right.
I mean, there are, of course, other factors that go into that in terms of diet and all that type of stuff. But I'm now in an environment where I run it so I can look however I want.
Right, right.
I mean, I can present myself how I want. But that doesn't mean that people still won't judge you.
Right.
And I think I've always been the sort of stylish guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not a trendy guy, so my style has kind of been my style. Mm-hmm. But it never was clothes. Like, it was always body image. Like, mm-hmm. it never was, like, what goes on my body. It was just how I felt about my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'll ever feel like I'm there, quote unquote, mm-hmm. or I'm comfortable, but I want to.
Yeah, like, yeah,
I want
yeah.
to get better with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I know for a fact, even in after posting that Insta story that day, I had so many conversations with males, mostly. Mm-hmm. About, like, you know, the idea of feeling perfect or idea of, you know, being the weight of, and I know this statement is problematic, but the weight of the strong man mm-hmm. and, you know, being there for everybody and being, you know, this pillar in everybody's life. And not focusing on yourself.
Right.
And I can really, like, you know, empathize with that. And the idea of focusing on everyone else's issues, listening to everyone, absorbing everyone else's problems, handling, being their Superman. Mm-hmm. But you're not being the Superman for yourself and taking care of yourself.
Right.
And, you know, giving yourself those solutions and stuff like that. I go through that every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just goes to show you, like, you're looking in at someone, but you're not looking at the mirror in the mirror with them.
Yeah,
you don't see what yeah. they see. You're never gonna see what they see.
Yeah,
like, you're, to this day, like, people even tell me, like, Ahmad, like, what are you talking about? Like, mm-hmm. half the stuff you say that is wrong with you, I definitely don't see.
Right, right.
But I'm like, right, because you're not looking at right, the same right, things. Right, like, you don't, right. you can't see it.
Right.
And I would expand that statement in saying, like, we're all very critical of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Even the idea of, for example, you don't wear shoes. Mm-hmm. I don't wear shoes at home. But even when I don't wear shoes, I have to make sure my feet look nice.
Mm-hmm.
I have to make sure my feet look nice because I don't want you to look at my feet and say that they look stupid. Just that process. And why can't I just take my shoes off and I don't yeah. give a fuck what you say?
Yeah, like, yeah, right, right.
Why is that? But that's not the world we live in
mm-hmm.
at all. Like, yeah. we care what other people think.
Yeah.
Especially in the modeling world, like, men are props.
You right, know,
my
right.
body is my tool. Like, that's mm-hmm. my money maker. Like, it's not my face always.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally, I talked to so many male models about this idea of, like, when they'll feel like they're in perfect shape and stuff like that, and just, like, they're understanding that, you know, I'm getting booked off of my body. Like, mm-hmm. I'm being booked off of the way, not just the way my face looks. Of course, that comes into consideration, but it's like, you're looking at my body first. Like, you're looking at my stature. You're looking at the way I stand. You're looking at, you know, the way I walk into a room. Mm-hmm. All of these different things that I may be completely uncomfortable with.
Right.
Or completely, like, insecure about. But it doesn't matter. Like, yeah. that's what you're looking at with me. I mean, same way that we're looking at a lot of, I wouldn't say we, but a lot of people look at women in that way where, you know, they're subjectifying. Is that the word? Making them subjects.
Yeah, yeah, objectifying them. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
By looking at their body in certain ways. And again, I agree, like, it's very much more public with them, but the same things are done with us at all times.
Right. They were making a point. They was like, you know, Barbies and all of these other different companies have been going out of their way to make all these different plus yeah. size and
it's
stuff.
Only one
but
still.
Still, it's only one. You
it's
know what I mean?
One can.
So it's just interesting. And one of the things that they were saying a lot of people suffer from is just, like, body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
And it's really just, it's like, you know, people have that analogy when it comes, you know, what you focus on gets bigger. If the yeah. problem is small, but you focus on it, it's going to be a big problem.
Yeah.
And there's so many things that people just focus on. It's like, oh, I have a big nose. And before I know it, my nose is three times its actual size.
Because yeah.
all I do is look at my nose. I was reading a story about this woman who, she was dealing with body dysmorphia. And she went to the therapist, and the therapist was like, hey, here's a ball of yarn. I want you to pull out the yarn how big you think your yeah. leg is. And by the time she put the yarn over her leg, it wrapped around her leg three times.
My best friend, Matthew, we actually had this conversation yesterday, too. He gets on me all the time
mm-hmm.
because he says that my issue is not my size or that I need to lose weight. It's that I also need to be just more confident with myself and
right.
own who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. Like, I can definitely agree with that. But I don't know how to. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how to ignore the problems that I've developed in my head and, you know, ingrained in my head in terms of... So one thing is, like, I don't take pictures with people because I don't like the way I'm going to look in that picture. Regardless of how you may feel, this could be like the most amazing picture for you.
Right.
No.
Right, like, right,
that's
right.
Not going to happen. And it's come to a place where, like, I'm not into a lot of family pictures. I'm not in, like, pictures of my friends and stuff like that. And it got to a point where I was visiting my family this year for Christmas. And they're like, oh, you know, we don't have no photos of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, at first I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, it's whatever. But then looking on a wall at your family and not seeing yourself in the family is the most, like, heartbreaking thing. Like, you're just like, what? Like, what? Why? It is like, why am I not in the pictures? Oh, because I feel like I don't look good in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's somewhat selfish for you to, you know, remove yourself out of that moment because you have not accepted yourself, whatever it may be.
Right.
And that kind of was the trigger for me this year to kind of begin this process of, like, you know, I just got to deal with it. I can't ignore this no more. Like, there are moments that I've definitely missed. I was there. I was probably even the person that took that picture, but I'm not in the picture. So it's like, that shook me.
Yeah.
And it made me understand, like, okay, you know, I have to just face it face on to build this confidence, you know, build that self-esteem, be more comfortable. But I can't be more comfortable if I never, you know, be uncomfortable within it.
Right. And that's why I was reading, and there were just, like, a lot of people. This isn't an overnight thing by far at all. But it starts with, yo, like, I am going to take a picture of myself and put it up on my Instagram. I am going to not dodge this photo next time I'm out with the fam. Or I am going to wear that shirt or those whatever that I felt like didn't really make me feel comfortable, but I was just... But I really did like the shirt, and I'm just not wearing it for no reason. And a couple weeks from now, I may be like, I don't want to take that photo, but that's cool. It's just like with anything else, and it's funny how just life intertwines in that way. It's like, even with opportunities, like you said, now I'm getting more into.
So that segues into dealing with meetings or dealing with speaking and dealing with going to events, because all of this, with me not seeing myself in photos made me feel like it made me analyze that, okay, what else am I missing out on?
Mm-hmm.
And I directly correlated it with, you know, I don't go to events.
Mm-hmm.
Why do I really not go to events? Is it because I don't want to go? Probably. Is it because I don't want to be around people? Probably. But the main thing is I don't want to be seen in a way that I don't feel comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want people to look at me and be like, oh, why did he look like that? Like,
Right.
I don't want to deal with that. Even if I know that it's probably not going to happen, but I still don't want to give people that power. I don't want to make that a thing. And it trickles down to so many other things in my life. And I'm sure with other people, like you said, this one little problem can be made so big and affect so many other things. And you're not even realizing.
Yeah, that's a
fact. And in my life, it's made me become this, like, hermit. You know, like, I don't go nowhere. People don't see me. Like, I don't even post pictures of my face on my Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, if you scroll back to, like, well, I probably took it down now. But, like, 4 or 5 years ago, 6 years ago, when I was really heavy posting every day on Instagram, I would post a selfie with my dog every day. Like, that was my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I love my dogs. But you can never, ever see a photo like that of me now.
Yeah.
So it's just like those little things. It starts with one thing, but it completely goes to different levels of your life when you have like a small insecurity like that.
Yeah. And you can't underestimate the power of, like you said, just taking those steps. Or like I said, I remember just looking at so many different things, and they was talking about, you know, just learning how to communicate with people or building esteem and stuff. And they're like, yo, go in the mirror and stare and look at yourself and tell yourself that you look like this. And I'm just like, bruh,
this is not
feel even worse with you even suggesting this shit to me.
Yeah.
But one day I was just like, bruh, let me go try this shit.
Yeah.
And then you in the mirror cheesing at yourself and shit. You're like, what the hell?
Yeah.
But it's just funny because you see, like, I think it's like, it makes you realize how much negativity you can speak to yourself.
For sure.
The fact of, I literally just said something positive to myself and it seems so weird. It's like, how have I been talking to myself?
Yeah.
It's like when you see a girl get with a dude who treats her like shit.
Yeah.
And it's like, how badly could you have been treated before if this level of ain't shit is much better than that? You know what I mean? So it's like, or a girl who may be with a dude who You know what I mean? Is
no,
is,
yeah, like,
treats her right, but it's like, why is it him? He looked weird. Or it's like, oh, because he's speaking to you in a way that's encouraging, that's empowering, and we do it, like you said, before you know it, it's been weeks, it's been years, and you're always like, I don't want to go to this because of this, or I don't want to take this picture because...
And you start to then begin to settle for so many other things, like, you know, not feeling like you deserve that. And that's me, you know, like... Not feeling like, you know, this is what I deserve or not. This is who I deserve or even this is where I should be because, you know, you told yourself that you're less than so many years or for so long and it's, like, affected so much. But it, like you said, it takes that one moment that you can, like, click and begin that positive speaking and those positive affirmations to really begin to build yourself up. And it's so funny how it's so... easy for you to get below and it takes so much like more effort to bring you back up but that's just how the world is, I guess.
And I know for me it was because I started a few years ago, I started lifting weights because I had a bad McDonald's journey and I just started lifting weights because I just felt like shit. I was like, yo, this food made me feel crazy. And then just as I started lifting weights and my physique and stuff started changing, it was like eventually it got to a point where I was like, I'm not even doing this to feel good no more. Like, if we're having a conversation about being healthy, like, I've met that. So why am I still putting all of this? And it's like, you don't even see how those types of just images can affect you where you're like, oh, man, I feel better and my stomach actually has gotten flatter now. So now why am I still going in the gym every day crazy trying to get it even flatter or trying to... So it's just crazy how you, like I said, you see how those things impact you and you're like, yo, like, what's the real reason behind this? Like,
what's funny is one of the major steps this year in terms of becoming more physical is not going to gym to lose weight. I'm going to the gym to change my lifestyle. I'm not going to gym to instantly see, you know, I've got bigger arms or I got a smaller stomach. That's not why I'm going to the gym. That's not why I'm exercising. I'm exercising because it makes me literally just feel good. My day goes better. You know, I'm more productive. I'm more efficient. I can sleep better. You know, things like that. My appetite is better. And when I'm taking even that idea of diet out of my vocabulary and I'm not eating these things because, you know, again, I'm going to get skinnier. No, I'm eating these things because it's better for my lifestyle. You know, it's going to make me live longer. It's going to make me, you know, my mind and my mental and my creative processes run better. And when I started, you know, changing the language and the, you know, perspective around why I did something, it's really helped me, you know, get and push through, like for real push through. Even in like since the last time I actually posted that, because I was like having a rough day that day. But even since that day, like I've been running every day and that's like just starting my day running and walking and stuff. It's helped my day. I just like I really wake up like ready to go, like ready to get
I feel you on that.
But when I would say, oh, I got to go work out because, you know, my trainer said I got to get in 30 minutes, and it never happened. Like, I would just be like, no, well, fuck that. Like, he ain't going to know I didn't go. When I started doing it for myself, it really helped. For real.
I credit most of my journey with getting more comfortable with myself, with starting small and just forcing myself to do it for the right reasons. Like, literally, you in the gym, like, okay, it's been 20 minutes. I know I did what I came here for. So let me not walk over here and start doing some extra shit because if I just burn 500 more calories, I can kill that burger I just ate. Or I could.
That's what my Apple Watch does for me. I'm starting now to battle my friends who can close their rings.
Bro, the rings are a game changer, bro.
Like that,
the rings are a game changer.
We had so many fun days, like not even realizing like you're working out or you're being active and stuff like that from my Apple Watch. Man, please sponsor me, Apple. But yeah, I would say like in, like just integrating small things like that where it's like unconsciously motivating you. And it's again, it's changing the perspective. Like I'm not working out just to work out. Like I'm working out because I want to at the end of the day see my rings close and that's going to make me feel good. Versus like, like yesterday I had burned like some random amount, like 850 calories. I'm like, when the fuck
did I
like when did I do all of that? But just being active and stuff like that, and changing my lifestyle and that's helped me. But integrating those small little things into my life has helped me. And it's not, again, it goes back to how small and minute something can be, like a watch or like positive affirmations or 30 seconds in the mirror or meditating and things like that. It changes and makes like these paramount, you know, impacts on your life that you don't even realize until like halfway down the road. You're like, oh wow, you know, I've been working out for a month. This has really helped.
Yeah, for real. And also just other people in your life, of course, as with anything.
For sure.
You know, just making sure you are around a community of people that, you know what I mean, encourage you, or if you are in a relationship with a significant other, they're not someone who, and that's one of the things the study said, a good amount of people said they didn't feel pressured by their significant other to, that they were like out of shape and stuff like that. But at the same time, some of them was like, yo, like, I don't even feel comfortable. I don't want to have sex because I don't.
Yeah.
I'm not comfortable with how my body feels.
Yeah. I mean, I'm big on I don't want to date and burden someone with my issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always been like that. And even now, having rough stints with dating and, you know, like, for example, my issues are internal. You know, like, everybody's not going to see them until I tell you them.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, from the outside looking in, you know, I'm stable, fairly successful. You know, I have all my shit looking like it's together on the outside looking in. When someone dates me or tries to pursue me, I don't want it to be a situation where, like, I'm becoming this typical, stereotypical, insecure guy. And it's nothing wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to be that guy. So I need to work on myself before I can even pursue anyone or even allow someone to pursue me.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to put that burden on them to even have to motivate me. Though I agree, like, yeah, whoever I choose to date should, you know, be able to push me as I'm going to push you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want you to have that responsibility if it's not already there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to push myself first, get myself together, get to a place where I can feel, you know, stable or secure or there, so to speak, or there enough to where I can entertain someone else in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And be able to, now I'm not focusing on my body every time I wake up. I'm focusing on you, or I'm focusing on us. And that's a whole different thing. That's a whole nother layer. That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah. Because literally, as you were saying that, I'm like, yo, like, I wonder if that's another deep-rooted...
So for me, I'm a homosexual. I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in my community, or in the gay community, body image is everything.
Right.
You know, having the perfect body, especially as men, is, like, much more deep-rooted than I would probably say, like, any other sexuality.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're grouped based on your body type.
Right.
And the idea that who's choosing me is based on my body type is insane when you think about it on, like, a deeper level.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a part of that community where it is, like, your fat shaming is so normal. Mm-hmm. You know, like, the idea of, like, that's how much you weigh. Oh, yeah, you know, that's not my type. Not even seeing you.
Right.
Like, the tone of things. And it's, like, again, that's a whole nother layer to what you have to deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I'm a black man. Yeah, you know, I am just a man. But to be a gay black man, it's, like, a whole different thing. Like, you know, and that's, again, unless you're part of that community, you don't even understand, like, that perspective.
Yeah.
Of having someone, literally, they're not even judging you on what you can do, what you do, how successful you are, how stable you are. You're not even get past that part. You're being judged on, literally, oh, you're not my body type.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, like, a whole nother forcing you to be in so deep into thinking about that every day. And that's one of the issues that I've had. You know, I have to think about that. Even before I try to date someone, I'm like, am I the body type? Like, I have to ask probing questions like that.
Mm-hmm.
Just so we can even get to a first, like,
get to a real good
first step.
That's a whole, like you were saying, like, that's a whole experience that doesn't even... How you address it, how you deal with it, how you get people to be comfortable with it. It's not even the same, but there's no information on it because it's been so shunned to the back. And then, like I said, I read this whole article with all of these things to help. But if I'm sitting here talking to someone who's gay and they're like, yeah, all that's fine, but I'm not a woman. So all these little methods that you just had,
for sure,
my brain don't work like that.
And it's because it's also, you know, we're a community inside of a community. inside of a community.
Right, right.
In our community, like, just the idea of, similar to how some Black people or any minority will feel, there's stereotypes and there's, you know, an overarching idea of what gay people look like, or mm-hmm. what the gay culture is. Mm-hmm. And there are not many people asking questions on, is there body dysmorphia inside the gay community? Or, you know, what are some of the things that gay people have to deal with? We're not even to that point yet. We're still struggling with accepting that gay people exist. Mm-hmm. So we can't even get to the part of, you know, what are the issues that they're dealing with? You know, the idea of, you know, being too fat or being too femme or being too Black, or even, you know, are you with a stereotypical gay? You can't do this. You can't wear that. It's like, we will have to break the gay community down to so many subgroups to even deal with the idea of body dysmorphia. Because mm-hmm. even, like, for example, I have friends who are very thin. They're facing some of the same issues that I deal with.
Right.
Because they're too thin. They're too small. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, what is that?
Yeah, yeah.
But that's what we're thinking about. And that's what we have to deal with. Now, I'm not saying that any other community doesn't have to deal with that. But we definitely deal with it on a day-to-day basis. Like, you can't even begin to socialize with some people because of the way your body looks.
Yeah.
And to think about that is such, like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
But that's how it exists. Like, that's just the culture. That's how it is. Regardless of, yeah, there are places where you can go and it's more accepting and more inclusive. That's the overarching thing. Like, that's how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's honestly, I've taken up an interest in the gay community simply because of how much I've realized that it's not addressed.
No.
But how much throughout my whole life it's been, like, as I look back, I can see how it's been mentioned. But so it's always been there. It's like that thing that's always been there.
Yeah.
But when you look back, you can always see how people have
sugarcoated it
or found a way to make you consider it as something that's on the outside looking in.
For sure.
And like I said, it's with a few things, whether it's the whole the thing with the Me Too movement, or how we treat women, or how we talk to women and stuff like that. Like I said, sometimes I may be around, like, older men, and I'm like, yo, y'all are crazy.
Yeah.
But I'm only saying it now because it's so prevalent now.
Yeah.
You were always like this.
Yeah.
You were always this sensitive.
And it was a culture that was ingrained. Like, they were taught this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, to have even family members you're still married to your wife.
Mm-hmm.
But you have a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife knows it.
Mm-hmm.
You expect your wife to sit there and deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
What you're doing is okay.
Right.
If your wife did that, you're divorce her.
Yep.
That's a narrative that is so prevalent in any type of community.
Yeah.
That's men get away with so much shit because they're men.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just again, that's another layer you have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, I feel like that takes away the power for me to say that I'm dealing with body issues when there are so many other women who are dealing with the same issue, but publicly. Like, I can deal with my shit in my home.
Mm-hmm.
But to have, you know, this image of what the perfect body looked like for women is, you know, flushed down their throat every day, all day. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's not for men, but it's just like, you don't even think, we can't even think about it for
men. Yeah, for real.
Like, because our life is so much better in so many ways, so to speak, that let's give it to women to begin to build them up before we try to take even more power for ourselves. And I think that's probably why, you know, certain men don't feel comfortable even talk about their body issues, because there are women in their life who've been dealing with this
every day.
And I mean, me also understanding, you know, diversity and inclusivity and stuff like that. One of the biggest things I have to understand is that raising an issue or bringing up a problem is not me saying that my problem is better or smaller, bigger or smaller than yours. It's just a problem. It's mm-hmm. just another problem. And I think if we start to also look at some things like that, where a man saying that he has body issues is not to say his body issues are more important than yours.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm still dealing with this too. I can empathize with you. I can, the same way you're seeing, you know, the perfect hourglass figure, I'm seeing six-pack abs all day. Mm-hmm. Even on plus size things, there are still men who are not actually plus size. Like, right, that's the shit that I have to deal with.
Right, right.
So, like, I'm just dealing with the same stuff as you. How can we collaborate on still promoting more body, you know, positive body images and stuff like that?
Yeah.
But, again, layers.
Yeah.
Got to get past a lot of stuff before we get there.
Yeah, I agree.
And, mm-hmm. Me, for example, I have to do this, and I'm aware of that. Me as a photographer and a person that has, you know, a platform on social media, I have to also be able to promote other diverse images of even what a model looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, even what, you know, someone who does a nude photo shoot can look like. I have to be aware of that. And until I'm doing that, I can't say that, you know, somebody else is not doing theirs if I'm not doing it myself.
Right.
And I think if we can all get to that space of, you know, realizing that we're still a part of the problem, regardless of what you think you are or not, we can begin to see some progress. So start taking steps yourself to, you know, make a greater good, so to speak, or make things better by just things you do every day. Like, for me, I still judge people. Like, I can't sit up here and lie and say I don't judge people. I don't say, oh, you know, you're a little sloppy. Like, I can't even say that.
Right, right.
I still do that. But how can I, you know, start looking at things with a different perspective? How can I be more positive to people? How can I, you know, not focus on somebody's flaws or even flaws that I think that somebody else might not even think is a flaw?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how can I take my opinion out of it? Like, all of those things, like, if we can begin to do that internally and on a personal level first, we'll see much more progress.
Yo, that's the realest shit ever, because I think as you start focusing on that, maybe from an inward perspective of seeing how much you deal with it, you can start to see how much you, like you said, you project that on other people.
Oh, for sure.
And you realize how you do it all day.
All day.
And it's like, yo, I'm doing this all day, just like I'm doing this to me. So it's just like, no matter which way I'm looking, it's always that same energy.
Yeah.
And it's like, in a way, I know for me, it's been like understanding, it helps me understand like, yo, like, sometimes I just got to get my joke off. Like, sometimes I just have to get my joke off. It's whatever. But at the same time, that for me is a realization of, yo, like, it's going to come regardless.
Yeah.
But you can, what you put out there will give you a better perception or a healthier image of what you're receiving. If you're always looking at people and being like, oh, well, they have this or they looking like this, then when you go out, you're always going to assume that's what you're getting because that's what you be doing. And I feel like it took a while for me to understand that that's where a lot of that stuff can come from. It's just like self-projected shit. And the more I started to understand the balance, like I said, I'm like you said, I'm not about to be like, I don't be judging people or get my jokes off or whatever. But, and even like I said, sometimes you have to do it out of selfishness.
Yeah.
Because I want to have a better self-image of myself, let me stop being so critical of other people's self-image.
Yeah.
And it helps you grow through that. And you, like I said, that's how I found my confidence and found being way more comfortable in my skin to where I can be walking around I'll be walking around here with pants with paint on them and shirts that look like they've been washed and dried 100 times. Like, bruh, trash.
Yeah.
And I'll walk around here like I got fresh G-Star, Louis, you know what I mean? So it's just like, you see the benefits of it.
Yeah.
But sometimes it just takes years to get to that point of realizing what you're doing to yourself. Like, it's nobody else. Like, you is doing this to you. Like,
and I mean, what's funny is that's literally what, literally this quarter, because this quarter has kind of been my checking myself and like analyzing myself, and that's what I've been doing. And what's funny is my best friend, he gets on my ass about this all the time because I am infamous. One, every day I wear mismatched socks, not on purpose, but I just find it okay to wear mismatched socks.
Mm-hmm.
But I also find it okay if I feel like dressing a certain way, this is just what I'm dressing.
Right, right.
And I often dress like a homeless old man. Like, everyone tells
me that.
But
that's how I be dressing, bro. That's so, how I be dressing, bro.
Like, you know, it may be sweats with bleach all over them or a shirt that may have a hole in it. And I will go to wherever I need to go.
Yep.
You know, if I feel like it's okay for me to present myself like that, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care who sees me. I don't, that's okay. But for me to be okay in that skin, so to speak, I can, of course, look at other people in a different way. It's not like I'm not looking at you. Like, for example, I find it like very like freeing to see you walk around without shoes because that's what I like to do.
Right.
You know, I understand the feeling. Like, I can look and be like, damn, that would actually be, you know, more comfortable to walk around with shoes all day in my office. Like, that would be more comfortable. But to other people, it's like, my feet don't look good, so I don't understand how his feet, he can wear his feet out. Like what is that? Mm-hmm. But that's how we think.
Right.
How we think all day. But again, like you were saying, like, until you can check yourself first and begin to accept those things within yourself, then you won't begin to project that on other people. Because even, like, dealing with weight, I had to deal with this with a client in understanding, like, when to liquefy or take somebody in or when not to. Mm-hmm. And everybody doesn't want to be thinner. Like, mm-hmm. everybody doesn't want, you know, not to see a curve in their waist, or everybody doesn't want to have thin legs and things like that. And being a photographer, those are things you have to think about, because, you know, a lot of photographers are programmed to make the perfect image. Mm-hmm. That's not interesting anymore. You know, that's mm-hmm. not even, like, even on a business model, that's not, like, going to get you anywhere. Like, having the most perfect image is not what is going to... Everybody can make the perfect image now. Mm-hmm. There's a tools on your... I can shoot a beautiful beauty image on my phone. Imagine what that does to me as a photographer.
Yeah.
If anybody has the power to do that, anybody can retouch scan on their phone now in their pocket. So that's not doing anything for me no more. I need to be okay with accepting the flaws. I need to be okay with, you know, if somebody has a blemish, if it's not distracting. And that's what's funny is that's my new perspective on things. If it's not distracting to my vision, I'm keeping it. Mm-hmm. If it's, you know, if it's working with the final vision, then cool. But I'm not removing it because I think it shouldn't be there as a flaw.
Right.
Like, that's a whole different perspective. And I think just in doing that, it's helped me, again, accept myself, look at myself differently, but also look at people differently in not a judgmental way and not a way to get them to the most ideal level of perfection or what that looks like.
Yeah, I feel that, and the journey continues
for sure. It will never be over.
So, yo, I really, 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 really appreciate you coming through to kick it. This was a great turnaround. I hit you up last week, and you was like, "Yo, let's do it. Let's get in here and get it done." So, I know you said you were doing more stuff in regards to, like, marketing yourself and you know getting out there and doing different things. So, give us, like, you know, your Instagram, email, or whatever you want to share, so we can have.
I'm Ahmad Barber on all social media platforms. AhmadBarber. My website is www.ahmadbarber.com. That's my social. I'm on Instagram the most. I'm on Facebook, LinkedIn, all that other stuff. But I would say just hit me up on Instagram.
Yeah, check him out. His work is amazing, yo. No cap. Like,
thank you.
This dude's work is impeccable. Like, I really think you should start, like, a YouTube, like, tutorial, like, join, bro.
I actually want to. I want to actually do a YouTube channel about storytelling. Mm-hmm. And just how to tell stories with images and make them have deeper meaning.
Yeah.
That's in process. I don't know if I'm going to do it yet, but I want to. That's an idea.
I think that's important, because, like I said, as the more I get into the process of doing photography, a lot of people were just doing, like, taking a picture of anything, and it was, like, labeled as, like, street photography.
Yeah.
And then eventually you start looking at other stuff that's shot in the same space, and you're like,
no,
why does this look so much different than what I shot? And then, like I said, you realize, like I said, as with anything, you realize, like, yo, like, there are things to study and practice and figure out how to get an image to actually mean something. Like I said, when I get books on, like, Gordon Parks or, like, all these, like, older people, I'm like, yo, y'all didn't have a 1D X Mark II or 7D or whatever.
Yeah.
But this photo resonates much more than this.
Yeah. And that's one thing I learned from this last masterclass, and I'm not trying to plug you either, but sponsor me. is just the idea of the power of feeling something when you take an image. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even, like, being in Atlanta, where, you know, every place has really been shot at least once. Mm-hmm. You know, there isn't a new location in Atlanta unless it's being built now. So being able to go to these locations and have a different perspective or have a different feeling or connect with something differently is so much more important now, because literally you can look up anywhere in the world now with a hashtag and see somebody have shot in there.
Yeah, that's a fact.
So, like, if you can't bring that new element to that space, then it's going to look like somebody else's.
Yeah.
And that's what's funny, like, what you say about street photography. It's like that with fashion photography. I can shoot with the same shirt, the same outfit, the same makeup artist, the same brand, everything, and make it look completely different. Mm-hmm. And until you can really connect with that power, you will never get successful. Like, you'll just be somebody trying to imitate somebody else.
Yeah.
And that's, like, you're not going to get to their level because you're not them. Like, I can't be Annie Leibovitz. I can't be Mario Testino. I can't be none of these other people's. But I can be a mob barber that's been influenced by these people, that's bringing my own perspective to this arena. And if you can't, I mean, that's just the way of the creative world now. You got to, I mean, nothing's new. Everything's been done. So how can you remix some things, bring some elements for the, like, even looking at some of your work in here, bringing these mixed media elements to your photos, it makes it a whole different thing.
Thank you,
because
sir.
It's you. It's you. But anybody could take a photo of something and just do it the same way.
Right.
So it's like, how can you make yourself different? And that should be our mission, period, is just to connect and feel with people and, you know, connect with people on different levels, but also be different.
All right, we out of here for real this time. Appreciate you guys so much, and we'll see you on the next one.
Thank you for having me.
If you enjoyed the episode, if you enjoyed the podcast just in general, because I feel like you guys like it. I really do. Go ahead and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. Leave us a comment and review. Just let us know what you think. Let us know. It ain't a bunch of us. It's me. Let me know what you think, how you feel about it, what you learned, and what you would want to see conversations in the future be about. I'm all for the feedback. I want all the smoke. So, we'll catch you guys on the next one, and enjoy the rest of your week.